And coming up next on Free Radio 101.1 and www.freakradio.org, it's your old favorite Bathroom Spears Broadsides with the two co-hosts hosting it up, Curb Hugger Chris and his associate and assistant, Uncle Robert Norris, or Bathroom Spear, as some call him. Stay tuned. We're going to have a special interview with Mike Rhodes, Fresno activist, at 6:30, so don't go away. And that, of course, was Skidmark Bob and Just Kiddin', a song that you, Curbugger Chris, have played on your radio station until it went belly up in January.
Belly up, yes. And we play, you know, these levels are really
too loud.
Funny, yeah. We sound funny, but that's all right. There we go.
I think we're sounding funny to ourselves, but not necessarily to the audience.
Audience, all right.
Yeah,
just making sure.
A little bit. There we go. A little better.
Oh, now I went away completely.
Uh-oh. Well, it's got a touchy sort of internal mic.
There we go. I got it. We got it.
Anyway, you know, mentioned in this song is Mumia Abu-Jamal. There's a new story that just came out yesterday, actually the day before yesterday. Today is the 14th of January, 2010, for those who don't know. And this is a story on U.S., well, what is it? It's IndieBay.org, the national site, not Santa Cruz Indie Media, but U.S. Indie Media. And according to this writer, journalist for Mumia is the author, U.S. Supreme Court to hold conference about Mumia Abu-Jamal's case. Yesterday there was a huge development in Mumia's case, according to this writer, or these writers. According to a posting yesterday on the U.S. Supreme Court's website, The court has scheduled a conference for this Friday, January 15th, tomorrow, to discuss Mumia's case. Specifically, they are looking at the Philadelphia DA's request to have Mumia executed without a new sentencing hearing. The Supreme Court has apparently been waiting for the ruling on the Spisak case, which was also released yesterday. In Spisak, the court ruled to reinstate Spisak's death sentence, but it is still unclear what impact this ruling will have. The common thread between Mumia and Spisak is the Mills precedent, and the court ruled yesterday that Spisak's case did not meet the standards of Mills. I'm not sure what the Mills precedent is, but perhaps we'll learn about it.
Precedents.
This is the link to the Supreme Court posting. For those who want to go on, they can check it online. And there's a recent article mentioned. Some background. This past March, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear Abu Jamal's appeal for a new guilt phase trial, but the court has yet to rule on whether to hear the appeal made simultaneously by the Philadelphia DA, which seeks to execute Abu Jamal without granting him a new penalty phase trial. So apparently there are two phases to every trial. First they find you guilty, and then they figure out what penalty, whether the death penalty or life imprisonment or whatever. In March 2008, the Third Circuit Court affirmed the Federal District Judge William Yone's 2001 decision overturning the death sentence, citing the 1988 Mills v. Maryland precedent. Yone had ruled that sentencing forms used by jurors and Judge Albert Sabo's instructions to the jury were potentially confusing, and that therefore jurors could have mistakenly believed that they had to unanimously agree on any mitigating circumstances in order to consider them as weighing against a death sentence. According to the 2001 ruling affirmed in 2008, if the DA wants to reinstate the death sentence, the DA must call for a new penalty phase jury trial. In such a penalty hearing, new evidence of Abu Jamal's innocence could be presented, but the jury could only choose between execution and life sentence without parole. The DA is appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court against the 2008 affirmation of Yone's ruling. If the court rules in the DA's favor, Abu Jamal can be executed without benefit of a new sentencing hearing. If the U.S. Supreme Court rules against the DA's appeal, the DA must either accept the life sentence for Abu Jamal, which looks like what he got already, on death row, or call for the new sentencing hearing. Meanwhile, Mumia Abu Jamal has never left his death row cell. And I don't want to spend a lot of time.
He can't be a young man either. I mean, this is one of those
It's back in 82. He was
perennial sort of human rights cases like the Pelletier case that just seems to linger and linger and get nowhere.
Amnesty International's main prisoners of conscience, Mumia Abu Jamal, Leonard Pelletier, and there were two others. Anyway, just thought I'd mention it because the song mentioned
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, that's really cool, and I like all news regarding that case. I think it's good news important news.
I mean, I think what I want to do now, and forgive me for kind of pushing the speed button on this, Chris, is I want to move to the tape. Actually, it's New Year's Eve. We haven't gotten past New Year's Eve. It's already 2 weeks into the new year, and this is still New Year's Eve.
Hell of a night, though. It really was.
Well,
a night.
This was pretty boring, actually, I thought.
Everybody thought. Well, I thought it was great.
We did broadcast a lot of it, but I'm going to play some of the tape anyway until we hit 6:30 or until you and I both get so annoyed and bored we stop the tape, or until you callers call in. 427-3772 is a call-in number, 831-427-3772.
And my usual spiel, you know, keep a paper and a pencil ready. This is activist radio, so don't just kick back, but get involved.
All right. Again, 427-3772. I got my ear on the ringer and my eye on the blinker in case you call in and we'll be able to pick you up. Here we go. Here's some interviews from the Pacific Avenue downtown on New Year's Eve, which was actually considerably quieter than in past New Year's, and even had less police, although they were spending the usual huge amount of money and setting up triple fine zones, and of course using the usual, the increasingly ominous sort of we're at high alert crime. We've got to be crime stoppers. There are evildoers everywhere. You know, the downtown is going to hell and so forth.
So
identify yourself, sir, for our free radio. So what are you calling yourself these days?
Butthole Surfer Dude.
And Butthole Surfer Dude, any comments about this, the old year leaving and the new year arriving?
Righteous.
So you're a man of few words.
No, they call me Chatterhawk.
They do?
Oh, yeah.
Well, start chattering, Hawkey.
Okay, well, I think that, you know, the old's past.
Yes.
And then, you know, tonight at midnight just brings in the new year.
Sure.
So all that angst that we have against the cops, I'm going to start loving them a little
bit. That's the spirit.
I'm going to love them. Monkey Officer, I love you.
And as they arrest you and drag you off at 51...
Bag up,
oh, you're so sweet. You're going to wash their tires?
Yeah, I can do that, sure. Yeah, sure, for a good price. Yeah, I can wash
them. Well, now, come on. Now, the Christmas spirit or the New Year's
shine your rims.
Really?
Got to keep it looking good.
Okay. Well,
we're in Santa Cruz.
I'll pass that on to Sergeant Harms.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I got a ticket for obstructing the sidewalk on my birthday on the 23rd.
Now, how did this come about?
I still have that cold. I think I need to go to the hospital. Maybe I'll die. That would be a good thing.
Well,
that
for sure.
I wouldn't have to pay for
that. I don't know about for sure. So why did they give you a ticket for it? What were you doing that was obstructing the sidewalk?
Catching some rays because I had this head cold.
Uh-huh. Lying on the sidewalk?
No, I wouldn't do that.
Lounging on the sidewalk?
There was a chair there. Where, so I sat in the chair.
Which chair? Where were you?
Actually, I thought the chair was for me and my birthday because my friends.
So you thought it was a birthday gift?
No, I thought, because they were taking care of me. You know, they were
where on the avenue was this crime?
Not at the avenue.
Oh, wait, somewhere else.
It's an industrial across from the HPHP.
Homeless Persons Health Project.
Yeah, right over there on
the floor. So was it a privately owned chair? Or?
Well, I don't know where the chair came from.
Yeah. So you just sat down.
Yeah. Can't tell you that one.
Well,
I don't know.
Then how can we possibly verify this story?
Oh, I don't know. A police report, possibly?
Oh, no, we'll have to look it up.
$7. On the 23rd. On the 23rd,
You're going to go to court on this, I take it.
Oh, you knew it, baby.
All right. Well, I want a full report, and perhaps, again, we've been talking with...
Sure. Butthole Surfer Dude.
Thank you, Butthole Surfer Dude. Surfer Dude.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, we have Fisherman has done his fishing for the day and is not going to be here for the New Year's celebration, even though it's only 8 hours away. What's this all about, Fisherman?
Usually the police are out, and I already have, like, about 7 tickets. I don't need a few more, you know.
And you actually have got your fishing gear where you were fishing for spare change.
Yeah, I did all right. I made about $20 today.
How many hours?
It took me about 4 hours.
That's $5 an hour.
It was a very good day. I mean, I usually don't make that much. Usually it's about $5, maybe $6 to hold it all
day. End of the year jollity or end of the year good spirits?
I just have to say, it was just blind luck. I mean, I went to the 7-Eleven, got me a Slurpee, and, you know, some food.
Squandered your money on Slurpees and food. You know, you could have given that money to the homeless services. They would have been able to pay someone to advise you how to become a better person. What's wrong with that? Drinker. Look at probably got some kind of booze in there.
No.
Vitamin water, indeed. What kind of a consumer is that who buys vitamin water? Mike, I don't know what to say about you, Fisherman.
I have no idea.
I don't either. But anyway, so any comments for the old year and the new year and any of that stuff?
Well, I hope things go better this New Year's. You know, of course, there's going to be some ruckus, you know, some bad homeless people harassing people and all that. And,
well, there won't be any bad police, though. We know that.
Well, hopefully not. You know,
they're well disciplined.
Yes, they are. Believe
and
it.
Well armed as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. I don't
well paid, although not necessarily as well paid as all workers should be, but probably more well paid than your average minimum wage worker downtown.
Oh yes, of course that. I mean, you know, maybe they'll lay off on the guys that you know, try to keep the area clean, you know, in the parks, you know, in the woods part.
Like yourself.
Yeah. At least take out, for the guys, you know, take out your own trash. I mean, they're sitting there thinking, you know, Wallace is never going to find them, and they have a big pile.
Chief Ranger John Wallace you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. We call him the Sheriff of Nottingham, so to speak.
The Sheriff of Snottingham might be better.
Maybe. I don't know. But I hope he lays off on us a little bit, at least, you know, for the new year. Make it a new year resolution.
Catch that one, John Wallace. maybe the resolution will reach you. But that's all I've got time for, unless you have something you really need to add.
No, not really, but you have a merry happy holiday and everything.
Yes, yeah. And may you have a good time, too.
All right.
Take care.
All right.
So we're down here talking to a major petty criminal. Your name, sir?
Jeremiah.
And Jeremiah, it's 4:30, and we're still waiting for the parade to start. And the infamous Gabe has shown up with his questionable case, banjo case, guitar case. What is that? And, of course, we also have...
Shay Shorty Lokes.
And Shay, you've been sober for how long?
Since the 15th of December.
Of December. Now, what made you decide to embark on this evil course?
Love of my life was in jail, and I was here all alone drinking like a fucking drinker.
Fish out of water.
Now, you are the love of her life?
Oh, yes, I am.
Still there. some sort of monogamous nonsense going on here?
Oh, no.
No?
No.
Okay. Anyway, you just got out of jail.
Yes.
And how are conditions in Stir?
The conditions in jail are still shitty.
And why do you say that? What about the conditions are you critical of?
Sheriffs have their heads up their ass still.
In what respect?
In retrospect, yes.
But, I mean, any particular thing that you're critical of?
You can't complain about the food. It's not too bad.
Right. What about, how long were you in jail?
Yep, BOP.
Probably.
BOP! Okay, we gotta go.
Talk to you later. There you have it, the non-report from the county jail. It's, that's how it is on New Year's Eve here in Santa Cruz. Yeah, it's about 5:15. And I'm making my way toward the meeting place for the parade up behind Kinko's in the FedEx Kinko's parking lot. It's a few blocks up yet. The dusk is falling here. The music you...
And, of course, the parade I'm talking about and that you regular listeners probably know about is the DIY Do-It-Yourself Parade, which is done without any city funding or participation. In fact, over city objections, or the objections of some in the city, that the parade was not done with permits.
We were freeloaders.
Yeah, freeloaders was how Mike Rotkin described it. He's the mayor. And here's just, I was walking up to where the parade assembled, which is up about a block beyond the Saturn Cafe. It's near Laurel and Pacific, if you're a local. And there's a lot of folks gathering there, you know, all gaily costumed, a lot of neon lit up or lighted up costumes. And you'll hear me describing a few, but you got to use your imagination.
Well, there it's coming from the loudspeaker at the Metro Center, and there's the omnipresent police car driving by. And as I head up Pacific Avenue, there don't seem too many people either waiting for the parade or heading toward the parade, though there is a second squad car which is headed in that direction. There was some speculation earlier today by curb hugger Chris, who we talked to, that the police might attempt to stop the parade because it has no explicit permit and isn't asking for one. But I suggested this was unlikely. However, time will tell. Actually, not much time since the parade is due to start in about 10 minutes. One squad car is parked right next to the crate near Laurel and Soquel in the disabled zone. There are no barriers set up yet. Another squad car is angled in the Taco Bell parking lot. And I've reached the stoplight at Laurel. So the third squad car is on Laurel Street, looking to make a left turn, perhaps. And those bagpipes here are coming up behind me. Not sure whether they are an approaching piper who's sort of beginning an early tune or something else, who knows. But it definitely looks like a smaller crowd than last year. Could the Mayor Rutkin's "you'd better get a permit" remarks have scared away most people? Okay. We'll have to see. Looks like they're only, well, I don't know. So far I would estimate only about 50, 60 people. But I'm only approaching the outskirts here as I enter the Kinko's parking lot area. People are practicing their dancing with colored lights. There's a peace contingent. Looks like at least several hundred. And there's Sherry Carnival with a large peace signal symbol. Looks like it's made of flowers. We have some dancing. What kind of a dancer are you?
I'm an everything dancer.
And you? And you?
Bark, bark!
That's a barking, dancing, or a doggy of some sort. And one of the dancers is being wrapped in what appears to be some sort of fur coat or stole. What's going on here?
It's an animal that my friend here caught and skinned and ate and then and wore the skin after she ate it.
We'll hear more about this kind of back-to-nature activity. I think I'm going to be playing this tape at another time. And, Chris, I know you did a great job, I hear, although I wasn't listening to the radio. You phoned into the studio on the New Year's Eve, as did I. But you did a lot of, you know, description of the parade, and I was... I couldn't find too much to describe. I mean, you know, I looked like there was going to be very few people there. There turned out to be considerably more than I thought. The streets were crowded during the parade time.
Actually, that was kind of an honor to the parade, and the fact that so many people crowded in right, just to all, watch it, and then they dispersed.
And they all
kind
dispersed
to get
and
dinner,
and
didn't go very far. But
well,
they,
no, you know. I thought that there was very few people comparatively from the last few years who were there for the actual New Year's Eve. You know, final ding dong. You know, here comes the new year. And in the couple hours before, usually the streets are pretty packed, and they weren't packed at all during the hours from like 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And then around 11:45, more people gathered at the clock, but really it was quite a small crowd.
I have to wonder, though, having been there, how much of that was politics and how much of that was just... the final grind of the recessionary, you know, forces at the end of the spending, season. You know what I mean?
I mean, I don't know.
You know, you've got a long holiday season coming to a close, and I think, you know, people just may have been weary. I don't know.
And I know that we talked about that, and we both called in. In fact, I only stayed for a couple hours, and you stayed throughout the entire evening and continued to broadcast. Through your cell phone.
Yeah, I was very pissed off,
Uncle
actually, because, you know, I mean, Dick Clark, you know, he got to come inside and, you know, some pretty chicks gave him a warm mug of hot chocolate. I called Dennis up afterwards, and he's like, nah, he goes, I'm walking up in about 20 minutes. I'm out of here.
However, you will have a second chance at fame. Tomorrow, you're going to be grilling our mayor, Mike Rodkin. We're going to be doing a special grilling session of Mike Rodkin at 11 o'clock. And I'm not really going to invite everybody in the world to come to this thing because I think we need to have a couple of lead people focusing on Rodkin. I hope you'll have your questions prepared there.
Oh,
Chris.
I will. I have been waiting for this moment for a while, so I'll be ready.
You can review the Rodkin debates on the air that I had with him, and you can see where I failed to nail the man to the wall, or where he gave answers that were inadequate, or where you feel you know otherwise. And there will be some other people at the meeting who will be asking questions, and we will be playing the Rodkin interview on the air, so that's going to be happening tomorrow, and then we'll be playing it probably on Sunday or next Thursday with a Sunday show that I do on Sunday mornings, 9:30 to 1 in the afternoon. But I'm kind of looking at the clock, and I'm noticing in about 8 minutes we're going to have Mike Rhodes of Fresno calling in. He's, again, from a city where there's been a lot of success in fighting to restore the rights of homeless people, but, of course, not enough success. The more you fight, the more sound and fury and fluff and puff they throw at you. And also more cops they throw at you, too, apparently.
You're sounding angry, Robert.
No. I'm maybe a little impatient, not really angry. I got some bad news about my Metro appeal today, which depressed
me.
And
now this is the trespassing.
This is the I'm standing talking to two homeless people and the security guard. Who I say, please identify yourself, doesn't want to do that and also doesn't want me to record what he's saying, even though he's accosting me. And essentially, it was for that.
Weren't you charged for blocking
that
gigantic sign?
It's not really a crime to stand in front of the huge Metro Center sign. It's a crime, according to Judge Simons, who found me guilty, to refuse to leave the Metro Center when, for whatever reason, you're asked to do so by a security guard. So this gives them a kind of ultimate power, which I don't think actually is in practice used by the security guards or even allowed, because I know that we went back there 2 weeks after this incident, which happened in the fall of 2008, and it was in November. And then 2 weeks later, we went back, we served soup there. A number of us stayed around, talked to folks, interviewed people, gave out flyers. The same security guard was there. He did absolutely nothing whatsoever. In fact, he allowed himself to be interviewed. He allowed himself to be interviewed the first time after I was given a ticket and escorted off the property. But in any case, I'm going to go into the details of this latest legal turn of events, which is really horribly technical and hard to articulate. I even have a little trouble understanding it. I talked to Attorney David Beauvais, who came all the way down from Berkeley on his own dime, and he's doing all this pro bono because he feels that you know, ordinary people should, particularly reporters, but ordinary people too, should be allowed to assemble in public spaces, of which the Metro Transit Center is one, provided they're not disturbing the business of the center. You might disturb a security guard, but that shouldn't be a basis for not being allowed to be there. And that, of course, was the issue. And really, I think we won the issue by publicizing it way back in November 2008. I've been there repeatedly, tape recording, doing pretty much what I did before, without any kind of even comment from any of the security guards. And so, in a way, we've won the whole case. But legally, because it was a false arrest, the city fought it tooth and nail. And it looks like they may have won because of a peculiar decision, not on the merits of the case, but on whether a judge made a mistake in prematurely turning down the appeal and then decided he hadn't, that he had made a mistake and he wanted to keep the appeal going, but the city attorney said, no, you're not allowed to keep the appeal going because you already sent the case back and you have no power to restore it. And the three judges, according to the attorney, and I wasn't in court when this happened, who argued my case, said that the three judges really wanted to hear the case, but they said, we're not allowed to hear this case because the first judge made a mistake. Although the judge refused to admit he made a mistake. He just said that, you know, that that was just how it was. So now the case is really probably pretty much lost. I'm going to have to pay a fine or do community service. Or, you know, if some attorney steps forward and actually wants to try to get a writ, as we call it, from the district court, which is expensive, time-consuming, and likely, and also discretionary. They can refuse to hear it if they want. They can refuse to even listen to it. Then the case may go forward. But as I said, I think we've won in the community, even though the courts, and I've always said this about the courts, they're a really uncertain avenue to try to go to win things in.
It seems that at a certain level, it seems you've got to bust through to a state or appellate level before you can get any kind of traction. I mean, they seem all bought up or I don't know.
Local courts are pretty much supportive of district attorney, city attorney, and the police. I mean, it depends on the issue to some extent, but I think on these issues, it's hard to find a recent case that I'm aware of where they've found for the defendant and found for the civil rights of poor people. It's just not, you know, it's just not done. They don't declare laws unconstitutional, like the obvious sleeping ban on constitutionality that was, you know, acknowledged as being unconstitutional in Los Angeles, San Diego, Laguna Beach, Fresno.
And all that's stopping us is a little bit of help, you know, from our local ACLU. Anybody step in and give us a hand?
Well, we need two things. We need an organization of activists who are either homeless themselves or housed and homeless working together, who put together a couple of plaintiffs who want to make the lawsuit. And that's not that hard. And then we need a couple of attorneys who are willing to file for an injunction. And that an injunction means a court order that has the same force as law, which says to the police, thou shalt not do this because it's unconstitutional. You will not be allowed to ask homeless people, what are you doing sleeping here, unless you can give them a legal place to go. And in Santa Cruz, there is no such legal place. Now, that'll probably, if we actually did get that ruling, it would prompt the city council to find legal places fast because it would leave the police without one of their favorite tools, which is the sleeping ban, although they would probably try to find other tools, and the city would pass a different law. But this law is so notorious, and it's so egregious, although, as Mike Rotkin will tell you tomorrow, if you ask him, there's only about, you know, only one or two tickets a night for this law, even though a lot of people are moved along at different points in large groups. They aren't
ticketed.
So why ticket
anybody, then? That my point, you know, fine,
because they won't move along unless you threaten to ticket them, is, I guess, the argument Rotkin would use. Maybe we should do a little role-playing on the air later Mike Rhodes calls in, which will be shortly.
When they ticket you, they're very specific, and I let Mr. Rotkin and all of you know the procedure out there. One of the things that they're certain to do as they begin the ticketing procedure on you, if you're a homeless person, is to tell you to not move. And this is classic, and what they're trying to do is to make sure that you remain in violation and do not come into compliance. Should you come into compliance before they can even put pen to paper, then common sense and I'm certain common law would dictate that you would be given a break, and no different than, for instance, if you were about to get a parking ticket and you manage to get the quarter in before the lady gets the ticket out, she usually, you know, gives you a pass. And one of the things that you'll notice when police do a stop on a homeless person is they tell them not to move. And so that they remain
the only basis they ever stop them is the claim that they're engaging in a crime, and usually when you stop someone for a crime, you tell them they can't move. But this is probably Mike Rhodes. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Chris and Robert.
Hey, Robert, it's Mike Rhodes in Fresno.
Hey there. Is this the man who is dissing the Fresno homeless czar by claiming that he is not giving out money to these squandering homeless people to do what they might want to do, like, I don't know, sleep somewhere legally and safely at night? Are you there?
Robert, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. Can you hear me? Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Looks like you can't hear me for some reason.
I can't hear you.
Hello. Can you hear me, Mike?
Hang on a second here.
Can you hear me, Mike?
Why don't you... Now you can hear me. Now you can hear me, but unfortunately it's not going to help because I'm on the phone where the people can't hear you. So what I'm going to do is ask you to call back at 831-469-3119.
Hold on, folks. A small technical difficulty here. Robert is going to reroute our guest.
Yeah, I think that at some point I'll just have to take a remedial course. I don't think it's anything I'm doing, but it has to do with some change in the whole studio telephone deal, which... maybe something's unplugged. No, they're both plugged in. Well, we'll see if we can get a call on the other line, which will enable us to get an interview from...
I can test that myself.
Well, he's calling in. I think the problem is that we can hear him, but he can't hear us. And maybe he can't even call in. I don't know what's going on. It sounds like he's not able to call in either. Ah,
How many homeless people does it take to screw in a light bulb?
No, he was able to call in. Excellent. Let's see here. All right, now hopefully...
No other community, geographic areas,
are
but also know the people who live there,
Whoops,
are comfortable,
some kind of
communicate with them, not just in
here.
Terms of language skills, but really relate to folks on a one-on-one basis.
Has said that it...
All right, so now I think we stopped... That may have been going on throughout the entire broadcast.
I think we'd have heard it. I think it's something you just hit by accident.
Yeah, no, I wasn't hearing it. I was listening on the internet.
Oh, my goodness. Hey there.
That's good. So we're talking with Mike Rhodes, who's the editor of the Community Alliance newspaper in Fresno, California, yes?
Hey, Mike.
Correct. Hi.
And you're also active in struggles to get the city of Fresno to stop closing down homeless encampments. I had heard you were giving out treasonously maps to homeless people to direct them to vacant housing that's being foreclosed on that they should use for shelter. Did that actually happen?
Well, that sounds like a setup, Robert. Let me say this. I think that addresses have been given out. I don't know who gave them out, but...
Very good answer.
And I know that there are homeless people living in abandoned houses in Fresno, bank-owned, foreclosed houses, and other structures, too. There's a lot of buildings in the downtown area that people are living in. So,
God bless them.
Yeah, it's everywhere. And you know, it's really a crime. The crime really is that these places are not available for people who need them to live in. And aren't, they're not welcomed in to all these homes that are sitting vacant. It's a crime against humanity that they're not. But there you go. That's where we live.
Well, let me ask this. I know you gave the city an ultimatum, not you. That was there not an ultimatum given by the distributors of these maps, whoever they were, these questionable types, that there was going to be a... The city would have 2 weeks to start dealing with the... Actually, they have millions of dollars in both federal and other homeless monies that they can expend to provide for motel rooms, affordable housing, tent cities, you name it, right?
Right. Well, that's right, Robert. We had a press conference on Human Rights Day. It was the 10th of December, and we did say that in 2 weeks... We were giving the city 2 weeks to start a plan, at least, that would start providing homeless people with the available housing that's in this community. It's just a lack, a failing of the economic and political system that leaves people on the streets when there is housing that's sitting empty. And so we said, you need to start addressing that. And if not, we'll go to the next phase. And it was implicit in that statement that we would encourage people to begin taking and living in the housing that is all over Fresno. There's hundreds, thousands of houses that are vacant.
Now, how did the city respond with any by opening up perhaps one room somewhere for a homeless person?
No, the city has been suspiciously silent, and in fact, the millions of dollars that they have received in federal stimulus funds has not been spent to house, as far as I can tell, one homeless person.
Mike, can I ask you a question, Mike?
Before you ask him, Chris, why don't you give him a chance to get a drink of water? It sounds like you need to get to clear your throat and take a breather there for a minute, Mike. Give you a chance to.
All right.
But tell me when you're, when you're ready, because I know you're kind of a nonstop worker, and you probably a nonstop talker too, like me. Who knows?
If you give me a chance, I will.
Okay,
Mike. I have one quick question. Can you give me an estimate of how many homeless people there are in Fresno?
Well, that's a good question, and one we've talked a lot about here. If I were to guess, just to make my own estimate as to how many homeless people there are here, I'd say there's probably about 15,000 homeless people in Fresno.
Wow. All right.
The city did a count a while back through the continuum of care, and I think they came up with something like 800. but the problem with that count, and everybody will acknowledge that it was never intended to be an accurate count of the homeless. It's just something that they do for HUD guidelines so that they can get funding from the federal government.
It seems strange, Mike, that the more homeless they find, presumably the more funding they can get, and then apparently they don't have to spend a penny of it because they got, I don't know, can you give some idea of how much money the city has gotten in 2007, 2008? 2009, however, whatever, for the last few years in terms and how much they've spent?
Well, this year, they just got like $4 million from the federal stimulus fund that is for the city and county of Fresno, and that became available to them in October, and they were in September over the summer, they were talking about that it would be released in October, and Greg Barfield, who is the homeless czar in Fresno, said that, they would have application forms for housing and just fill out the form, and we'll get you into housing starting around October 1st. Well, October 1st has come and gone, and now we're in the middle of January, and I've talked to a lot of homeless people, and not one of them has gotten any housing from this project. They haven't gotten anything.
These are applicants who actually have filled out forms, or
yeah, I think they sent them to the Fresno Housing Development Department or HUD, and they filled out forms, but nobody has heard back from them about the housing. And then my understanding is that there's this application process where you have to qualify to be eligible to get an apartment under this program.
Well, we want quality homeless people.
Well, I guess, yeah. And you've got to have an income that's substantial enough to pay for the housing. So what they're doing, basically, is just getting people in the door, if they do that at all. They haven't even done that yet.
And it sounds like you have to be employed for this sort of stuff. I mean, I'm a homeless guy, and I don't have a job, so I guess I'm just shit out of luck if I was living in Fresno, right?
You'd have to somehow prove to them that you have a monthly income adequate to cover the expense of the apartment.
Well, just,
otherwise, you'll be out in 3 months or 4 months.
No, but according to what you've told us, even if you don't have an adequate income, and you don't even get in for 3 or 4 months, that hasn't even happened yet, right?
Right, right. Well, and you'd have to have an income, you know, so that you could show them that you've got this income, and then they'll give you the housing. But yeah, somebody who's like, you know, living off of recycling or, you know, just what they can hustle up in a day, there's no way they'll ever get a place in under
well,
the.
For the sake of argument, has any homeless person mustered up the income and tried to get housing, even meeting their standards, and been successful?
No.
Does that mean? Well, have they? Are you saying they've tried and they've been unsuccessful, or they haven't tried?
Right. It was a two-part question.
Right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. So I guess the answer is that yes, people have tried, but no, nobody, as far as I know, and I've been talking to a lot of people, nobody, as far as I know, has gotten into any of the housing through this federal stimulus money.
Now, this guy, Greg Barfield, is a homeless czar who is not only a homeless czar, but he's also part of your chit-chat group in the Fresno Homeless Advocates, right?
Well, he hasn't been very chatty lately.
Right, but he is a party to this, and there's been some controversy as to whether he should be allowed even on the list, given his apparent, you know, interest in, disinterest in actually getting anything done. A typical poverty crat, you know, a poverty pimp kind of guy. I mean, I don't see anything unusual about it. But I've lost the train of my thought. Chris, take over quickly.
All right. Well, I mean, this is fascinating. The difference between what the city says, 800 homeless people and 15,000, sounds a lot like San Francisco. And, I mean, I would have guessed, I was in San Francisco this spring, and last spring, and I would have guessed 15 to 16,000 in San Francisco. So, you know, you're talking about a humongous homeless population, millions and millions of dollars going in, nothing being done for the homeless people. What are you going to do about this, Mike?
Oh, yeah. Well, it is very visible.
I mean, what's your plan?
Yeah. The homelessness is very visible here, and you have encampments in downtown Fresno that are developing. There's an interesting particular encampment at Ventura and F Street in downtown Fresno where there's about 100 people living, and they started building their houses out of wood. There's some foundations and framed walls for their walls and pitched roofs. The city is trying to evict them right now. And so you asked me what we're doing. You know, there's a number of things that we're doing, but one of the things that we're doing is right now we're focusing on that encampment that the city is trying to destroy. They had a run-up to this in early December where they posted notices that they were going to dismantle it.
Well, three days before Christmas, right?
Yeah. Well, something like that. I think it was maybe 8 days before Christmas
right.
They were going to go in. And, you know, we embarrassed them. We put the prospect of building a manger scene there and having baby Jesus dragged off. You know, we said, well, let's see you drag off baby Jesus.
Now, wouldn't that be a violation of church and state here? Aren't you? What is the ACLU? No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Continue. You were successful in stopping it.
They thought it was a hoot, you know, what we were talking about doing. But the city didn't, and they postponed the destruction of the F Street encampment until, what was it?
January 6th, Epiphany.
January 6th, the Feast of the Epiphany.
Right.
Which we were hoping they would have an epiphany and back off again. And so we started challenging them on a number of legal issues there. Some of the people that were going to be evicted were on a sidewalk, for example. And, you know, it's like, this is public property. They're not trespassing. They may be encroaching on a sidewalk, but that's a different issue. And so there was that issue. There was an issue about a fence they were building around there. Around the property, the question was, who's paying for that? Is that being paid for with taxpayer dollars? There's about 10 issues.
This is the local ACLU is involved,
yeah.
Right?
the ACLU.
You actually got the ACLU involved. Congratulations.
We did. They hand carried the letter to City Hall the day before the eviction. And the city that evening, they were going to start the eviction the next morning, about 7 or 8 at night. They contacted us and said that they were calling it off because they had some concerns, nothing to do with anything that we raised, but that they had come up with some concerns about the property and they had decided not to move forward with what they euphemistically called the cleanup.
The auguries were not favorable.
Yeah, so...
Let me, at the same time, as I understand it, hadn't the encampment largely been empty because people were afraid they were about to be evicted?
Well, it was totally occupied until the day before the cleanup, and then people were moving out.
By the cleanup, you mean the clean out, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The destruction of the encampment.
Right.
So when we got down there in the morning... on the 6th, there was maybe 20 or so people still living at the encampment, people who just wouldn't leave or for one reason or another couldn't leave.
Did they come back after the successful lawsuit or the successful threat of a lawsuit?
Well, they are back there now, but what they did is they moved to another vacant lot about a block away, and the police came and told them if they didn't leave there, they were going to be arrested. And so they went back to the F Street and Ventura encampment because they knew that we had provided some, at least temporary, safe ground there for them.
Plus, there were structures there, right, that had already been set up.
Yeah, but most of those were still there. They didn't dismantle their
structures. Well, that's what I mean. That would be the reason to go back there because there are structures there,
right? Right, but a lot of people were living in tents, so they just simply moved the tents back to where they'd been the day before.
And this is we're talking about a week ago because today is the 14th. This is almost so that they've been there for the last week.
Right, right.
Mike, is there any place on the web to follow this story in anything like real time? Is anybody tweeting about it? Is there a blog coming from inside the encampment?
We're not very good tweeters here. There's virtually nothing that I could direct people to that provides them regular updates that's like on a website. We have a listserv here, which anybody would be welcome to join, and Robert was talking about that a little earlier. I think where he was going with that is, you know, why did we allow Greg Barfield on our list?
Well, I don't really. That was a minor controversy, which I mentioned. But I think that Chris's concern is that people listening to this broadcast, because it follows quite a number of steps.
Well, not only that, but it's an incredible story. I mean, I mean,
and it's ongoing,
something I wouldn't mind. Yeah, it's something I wouldn't mind following myself. And if we could have a way.
It's strange that you don't have anybody of all. You have a lot of house people interested in this story, Mike. Isn't there one computer savvy person willing to set up a website and do something?
I could suggest it to people. I think, yeah, it just hasn't been done yet.
Things like this tend to build, too, if we can, you know, if you can get the word out on the web, and now we're doing this broadcast tonight, there's a whole bunch of new people that are going to be exposed to this story. I really feel that could be a big help for these folks. I mean, the more people whose eye is on this, I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know. It could be helpful.
Let me see what I can do.
Also, following up on the foreclosure maps, do we have any, was that just sort of a one-shot propaganda deal as a sort of a pressuring device to get the city moving, which didn't work? Or is there some follow-through with attorneys willing to back up people who are going to be threatened with eviction by the police, or are they going to do guerrilla tactics? And again, I know you're not the mastermind behind any of this, but I'm asking, have you heard anything on the grapevine regarding, are people going to move from building to building? Have they actually taken over more buildings or gone into use these maps that you gave out? And why don't you have a copy of the map for me, just in case I get evicted?
Well, we should come up with one for Santa Cruz, perhaps.
We should come up with one for Santa Cruz, that's for sure. We're talking with Mike Rhodes, Fresno activist. You can find some of these stories on indiebay.org/Central Valley, but that's mostly earlier stories. I don't think you've done a recent story on this that I've noticed, Mike, but I know that you do. you're a madman with a camera, and you also are good at grabbing audio and video clips.
YouTube, man.
YouTube is even better.
I mean, YouTube rules, man.
We have some information up on IndieBay, so keep checking there. There, and as you mentioned, there's a lot of stories. You were talking about sort of a historical record of what the struggle has consisted of here in Fresno. If you go to our website, FresnoAlliance.com/home, and then click on homeless, you'll see a chronology of articles that go back probably 5 or 10 years now. And that really does tell the story about what's been going on in Fresno over the last 5 to 10 years on homeless issues. I need to update it. It's not too big on what's happened in the last couple months, but I will update that.
Again, that's www.fresnoalliance.com/home. www.fresnoalliance.com/home. Any addresses or phone numbers that I give out on this program that you can't catch because you don't have your pencils ready, as Chris has urged you to do, you can get by calling the Huff line, 423-HUFF. 423-4833, and I will call you back, assuming you have a contact number. And if you don't, well, too bad, you're too poor. So I know also, Mike, I've been reading on your listserv that police, even though they didn't, they decided for their own reasons, or the city decided not to immediately attempt to evict. And that's interesting that it's evict and not just get the fuck out of here, mister, like they were doing a block away, that the police were doing with the homeless. At the same time, they were going after another encampment on another side of town?
That's right, yeah. Al Williams, who's homeless and lives by the Roding Park, which is maybe 4 or 5 miles from downtown Fresno, was there that day to join in the celebration of our victory of stopping the city from evicting people at F and Ventura. When he got back to his encampment, which is at the park, all of his things were gone, and so were the property of other homeless people that he lives with. And he started asking around. He talked to one of the maintenance workers who is at Roding Park, and this person said, well, you know, the police came, and they told me to take your stuff to the dump, and I did.
This is a violation of the Kincaid order, right?
Well, it is. It's just so in your face that it's astonishing.
Naturally, the ACLU lawyers and three other prestigious firms immediately moved to take legal action.
Well, the ACLU in Northern California, they're based in San Francisco. They were really, Robert, they were very interested in this, and they are on it. They sent an investigator in to interview the park personnel. We've got the police officer's name, Kirk Smith, who was responsible for this attack on the homeless in Roding Park. They're not going to let go of this. This is not going to go away quietly. As much as the city of Fresno, I'm sure, would love for it to go away. The real question in my mind is, was this the action of a rogue cop that just really screwed up, or was it more conspiratorial? Was it just a coincidence that this happened on this very day that we stopped them from destroying this encampment downtown, and that Al, who's been a very visible leader in the homeless community here in Fresno, and he was one of the main plaintiffs on that lawsuit.
In the Kincaid lawsuit.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it just a coincidence that it happened on that day to him? I don't know the answer to that, but I think it was suspicious timing.
Public records, I guess what you want to do is subpoena the records in some sort of lawsuit to find out what's going on inside the police department. We're talking with Mike Rhodes in Fresno. It would be nice if there was a way for people to call in, and I guess there is. You can try calling 427-3772, and though you can't hear us, we can hear you, so you can ask a question, and then maybe Mike can answer it on the air. It's kind of a bizarre approach. I don't know if it will work. We'll try it for a little while if anybody wants to try it.
Hey, Robert, can I tell you one more interesting thing?
Sure. And is it, perhaps can I guess that you were going to be talking about a successful encampment that is now being funded by private funds?
Oh, no, it wasn't. But that, I'll tell you that one, too.
Go ahead.
But let me first tell you about the kind of interesting legal aspect to this encampment at FM Ventura. The property, as it turns out, and one of the things that I think has bedeviled the city of Fresno is that the owners of that property died, and they didn't leave the property to anybody, and none of their heirs or would-be heirs are interested in owning it. So this property is in limbo. So the city's argument that they have an owner that is complaining that the homeless people are living on their property and they want them evicted and they're trespassing just evaporates.
Hold any water at all, no.
There's no, I mean, unless they have some communication network with the dead that I'm not aware of, they're not talking to these owners anymore. They're just blowing smoke, and that's one of the reasons why they had to back off of the eviction, because they were saying that they had the owners, that the owners were complaining to them that these homeless people were living there and they want them off their property.
What about the second encampment, or the one that actually is being funded privately, providing porta potties and other facilities?
Oh, that's the same property. This is the Ventura and F Street encampment. We just heard today that this guy Robert Morris, who has been going out for months now to encampments in the downtown area and providing them with water and this and that, he took a crew down there and totally cleaned that encampment up, picked up all the trash, put a portable toilet up there. And
Wait a minute. Did he have a security guard, a 24-hour security guard, as the city would require?
Well, you have to explain that one.
All right, let's let that one pass for a moment.
Because that's what the city did when they, for a short time, put a portable toilet up. They paid more for the security of the goddamn toilet than they did helping the homeless.
Well, property is an important thing to protect in our society, you know. Mike.
Now, wait a minute. They have the shitter is open to be used.
They had a security guard to make sure that people did not shit too long or too hard or engage in any other behavior inside.
You got to be kidding
and
me.
To secure the shitty as well. Sort of a shitty city, but anyway, go ahead.
So anyway, yeah, the city's not involved with this at all, and part of their argument is that...
That's why something is happening, because the city isn't involved with it, right?
Right. So this guy Robert Norris has gone out there and done it on his own.
You don't mean Robert Norris, that's me, and I got to admit, I'm a cool guy, but I don't think I did that.
I don't think you can afford it.
Rick Morris, sorry. So Rick happens to be the owner of one of the medical marijuana dispensaries in Fresno.
Oh, God bless America.
So his name is Rick Morris?
Yeah, Rick Morris.
Uh-huh. Okay. As from Robert Norris.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Temporary confusion. And so he's been going out as part of, you know, his goodwill service, I guess, and providing... water and other supplies to the homeless. And this is just another in the steps of the things that he's doing.
What about medical marijuana? Is he providing that for the homeless?
Well, I couldn't speak to that. I have no idea. But I do know that the city of Fresno has medical marijuana dispensaries under attack as well. In fact, Rick himself will be in court on the 26th. I think it's the 26th. It's coming up later this month. Because the city is attacking medical marijuana dispensaries, saying that they're a danger to the community, and they must be shut down immediately. In fact, they got a temporary restraining order to shut them all down while this goes through court.
And so what's happening to Rick's dispensary? Is it still open?
Well, interestingly, from what I hear, and this is just what I hear, I think it's true, is that Rick actually is the only dispensary in Fresno that's still open, that all the others are shut down because, it would be a violation of a court order to remain open.
So they voluntarily shut down.
So Rick's is not,
I think you have to call and set up an appointment to go in. But that's what I hear, that he's keeping it open even though the city has got it.
The police haven't busted him yet for violating the TRO.
No, but they have been harassing him. He was arrested a couple weeks ago in an incident where he had his stereo on at his home. It was a little too loud, according to the police.
Unreasonably disturbing noises, eh?
And they actually took him to jail and processed him. He had a $200 bail to get out. So $20 bucks got him out.
Just for his stereo being...
Well, yeah. you can't be too careful. You know, people of ordinary sensitiveness who find
now,
the
this
music
guy's got to have a good lawyer.
Harshly loud. Actually, we had a similar situation. I and three others were ticketed last week for singing political songs on Pacific Avenue in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz. We sang a sound called Downtown, which, you know, Chris, you're familiar with. It's Petula Clark's Downtown with new lyrics. And, of course, in Santa Cruz, there isn't even such a thing as a tent city that Fresno had. Those have all been destroyed or criminalized or abandoned. And under the city's sleeping ban and actually camping ordinance. And the marijuana dispensaries, although there are two that are open, there's a move to ban all new medical marijuana dispensaries coming up. Perhaps on the next city council agenda, we thought it was going to come up on the last agenda, but it hasn't. And I know, Chris, you will be perhaps sharing a joint with Mayor Rutkin tomorrow and trying to get him to loosen up. We're having an interview with the mayor tomorrow.
You don't suppose he'd want some, do you? I brought some along with me. I mean, I certainly will have some.
You can even offer to some of the police officers who often cluster in this cafe where we're not the Sub Rosa, but across the street where we're going to be. I'm going to be meeting.
Oh, that's wonderful. Robert, what are you setting me up for, buddy?
Find out. Try to take over my show, will you? Okay, so...
Mike, I don't know. It's been a fascinating interview. I want to thank you personally for calling in, but, I mean, I just wish that there was a way we could follow a little more closely, especially this encampment, and I hope you'll keep us informed if you make some strides in that area, huh?
Thank you. Yeah, I'll see what we can do about providing a more consistent string of information.
Well, I know there's an event coming up on the 20th in San Francisco by the Western Regional Advocacy Project, which is a meeting of homeless advocates statewide. Are you going to be at that?
Yeah, that's Tuesday or Wednesday, right?
Something like that. Yeah, it's the 20th, and today is the 14th, so it'll be next Wednesday, I guess.
Yeah, I'll be there.
And Chris will be sent up on a boxcar, probably, or possibly. any dates coming up in Fresno that people should know about? I guess you mentioned there's a court. Rick Moore is going to be in court on the 26th defending his medical marijuana dispensary rights.
Right, there's that. Okay. Let's see. There is a date that we have. Okay, so the 20th, we have to have arguments into the court on this Ventura and F Street case. There's also going to be, the following week, will be a hearing in court. The city is trying to get a temporary restraining order so that they can evict the homeless from that encampment. We are working with attorneys here locally. I think this time, the legal assistance will come from Central California Legal Services.
What's the feeling among homeless people at this encampment and elsewhere in the city? Is there more or less sense of solidarity? Are people more discouraged or more encouraged? Do you have any feeling about the street?
Well, for what it's worth, when we were there on the 6th, there was sort of a spontaneous organizing effort by homeless people to hold a march to the courthouse from the encampment on the day that we're going to be in court. And I don't really have that day with me right now, but I can get that information to you.
Sounds good. I appreciate your being on the air. I'm going to give you a chance to get in the last word if you've got some more you want to say, unless you've got something you want to add, Chris.
No, just any possible way, Mike, that we can get in touch with you, that our listeners can keep up with you, now would be the chance to, you know, shoot out URLs or emails or phone numbers, any way that we can direct our folks to support you.
Well, really the best way to follow this, I think, is to keep checking at indiebay.org on the Central Valley page. There's a Santa Cruz page. There's also a Central Valley page. And if you go there and look on the right-hand side, you'll see all the current articles. And when there's important developments on homeless issues, I'll have a story posted there.
Try to post it on YouTube, too, if you can, if it has video. Much broader coverage there, much broader listener or watchership or whatever.
Okay. Well, thank you.
And that's the order from Norris of Santa Cruz. Hey, thanks, Mike Rhodes, and appreciate your calling. I know you've had a busy week, so keep it up and, you know, take a breather.
Hey, Robert, too. Are you going to San Francisco on the 20th?
I don't plan to go to San Francisco on the 20th, but it's possible. I know the 20th is a Wednesday. I have a meeting of the Huff. Huff usually meets every Wednesday morning, 10:30 to 12:30 at the Sub Rosa Cafe, for those who are interested. And we are having, increasing harassment of street performers here and looking into that issue. But, you know, maybe. I'll talk to you about it off air at greater length if you'd like, and maybe we can, give you a heads up as to what's happened at previous such meetings that I've been to.
Well, yeah. It's always the more the merrier. So we would, if you can bring a trainload of people up there, we'd love to have you.
That would be great.
Hey, Mike, I just want to say on behalf of all the homeless folks here in Santa Cruz, of which I am one, you make sure to tell everybody at that encampment that our hearts are with them, and God bless, man. Keep fighting them. Keep fighting them. That's really cool, man. Give them our best, man.
That's on the solidarity from Santa Cruz.
Yes, sir.
Thanks Mike.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. And that was Mike Rhodes.
Wow, that was a fantastic interview.
Do you have any... Mike is actually a regular caller.
I can see why.
He's good. He's articulate.
He's out there fighting a good
not
fight.
Not as articulate as me, of course. But
nobody's that articulate.
No, that's true. You got to go. And of course, Mike Rotkin will probably vie for that award tomorrow when you...
Is he articulate?
He's articulate? Glib as they come.
He's
the fastest tongue in the West, I would say.
Yes. Silver-tongued Rotkin.
They don't call him Rapid Fire Rotkin for nothing. Actually, I don't think anybody calls him that but me, but
hey,
I do call him that. Anyway, let's take a brief musical break. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm with curb hugger Chris Doyen, the doyen of the broadcast.
Good evening, Santa Cruz.
And he's sometimes available downtown when it's not raining, although it looks like rain's coming up over the weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Come on, don't say that. I just got back into town from the last rain.
Well, there you are. Rained out again, eh?
Chris
Watts, and just don't sit too close to the building.
And I become Mountain Man, Chris, see?
And you become Mountain Man, Chris.
I have a plan for the rain.
Hiding in the mountains, like the Che Guevara of our day, although
it's from Ranger Rick.
But stay away from Chief Ranger John Wallace.
No. Wrong jurisdiction. He's got no jurisdiction where I live.
Ah, hopefully. Well, that's
I got big, bad, real state rangers, man, not phony-ass county rangers.
And now a little music.
I met a stranger. Oh, she told me. About people in a foreign land. She pointed her finger. She said to me, there's people. Oh, there's people hungry over there. Some people laughed. Oh, when they saw her face. But I cried. Oh, I cried. I saw her smile. She got a toothbrush in her back pocket. Mm-hmm.
my people in a foreign land. She pointed a finger. There's people, oh, there's people hungry over there. Some people laugh, oh, when they saw her face.
And that was Otis Taylor, Hungry People. A couple of interim articles that I ran into that I want to read here. Interesting one from the Mercury News, which occasionally actually has a news story in it. Impressive. San Jose use of tasers faces new scrutiny after federal court ruling. You, of course, know what a taser is. I've never been tased. Have you ever been tased?
Yes, I have.
When did you get tased?
I was at a Grateful Dead show.
Really? How long ago was that?
Perhaps 7-8 years ago.
Post-Jerry Grateful Dead
Post-Jerry
Grateful Dead. Yeah, actually, the tasers, you can see Officer Winston walking around town with a taser on his hip. It's a kind of a yellow or an orange-handled gun.
Yeah. Officer Warren is also very fond of his taser. In fact, I've actually gotten to see him wield his taser.
He wielded his taser.
Oh, you were there, actually, that day. Remember, he was wielding it at our friend Max, who we had at Taser Point.
You know, I remember you're saying that about it. I didn't recall seeing that, but I wasn't looking directly at Officer Warren that I remember.
He came out of the car with it drawn, and he was quite anxious. He was really hoping he would get to use his taser.
Hard to say what an individual is actually thinking, but their behavior does speak for itself to some extent. But this is an interesting court ruling that may have an impact on us. It's a story from late December. Out of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the federal court that covers nine states, the western states, right underneath the U.S. Supreme Court. So it's a pretty important court.
Okay.
It's the court where I'm appealing my case to, and the, you know, you're acting like a bunch of Nazis, salute, so don't arrest me for a silent gesture to you, unless you want a lawsuit. And, of course, they got a lawsuit. This is an important court because every decision made here impacts the entire state of California, and more. An appeals court ruling this week limiting the police use of tasers may have special importance in San Jose, where every police officer is armed with a stun gun and where their use in a series of situations has raised controversy. In its ruling, the 9th District U.S. Court of Appeals stated that the stun guns should only be used under limited conditions since they represent a more serious use of force than other non-lethal police weapons. The 3-0 panel ruling, which applies to California and western states, comes as the Santa Clara District Attorney is reviewing an October incident captured on videotape in which a San Jose police officer stunned a San Jose State University student in a hallway with a taser, which I mentioned this on the air at one point, as his partner used his baton on the man, Fong Ho. That's the guy's name, who was tasered and batoned. The Mercury News...
Yeah, what was Fong Ho doing to elicit such...
The Mercury News, in an article on the use of force last Sunday, highlighted an incident last summer. And actually, they covered it in some detail. I think he wasn't doing much of anything. But I don't recall the details, just that it was quite an incident, and it was videotaped on for YouTube. The Mercury News, in an incident on the use of force last Sunday, highlighted an incident last summer in which an officer used her taser on a couple who were arguing outside the public defender's office. The families of two suspects who died after being stunned with a taser by the San Jose police are currently suing the department. In San Jose, Police Chief Rob Davis told the Mercury News he would soon go over the ruling with the city attorney's office. Actually, since this article was 4 days ago, I guess it's taken him a week and a half, and he still hasn't, of course, vacation, New Year's, hasn't gone over the ruling. But City Attorney Rick Doyle said he saw no contradiction between the ruling and city police policy, which he said is based on an officer using a, quote, reasonable level of force. The court got it right. The officer has to have some immediate threat to use it, Doyle said. Lawyers in two pending lawsuits contending San Jose police improperly used their tasers said the court ruling would bolster their allegations of excessive force by San Jose police officers. The Ninth Circuit ruling came in a California case involving a Coronado police officer who used his taser on a motorist who got out of his car, agitated but not threatening the officer after being pulled over. In the ruling, which could be reviewed by the full Ninth Circuit or the U.S. Supreme Court, the panel laid out a series of factors that would determine whether the use of tasers was appropriate. Is there danger to the officer or others? Was the suspect accused of a felony or a misdemeanor? Was the subject actively resisting, or was the resistance passive? Was there some less serious alternative way to quell the disturbance? The court's ruling is the first appellate court decision that sets out standards for when tasers can be used. I think that's an incredible commentary on how slow and how generally useless courts are. These tasers have been around for at least a decade, if not longer.
Oh, longer, much longer,
yeah.
Much longer than that.
The decision means that the only reason to use the taser is when you are in danger. It's a self-defense measure, not a tool to get compliance or to punish people who do not comply, said attorney Eric Geffen, who represents Marcos and Cynthia. Zuniga, Marcos and Cynthia Zuniga. Marcos Zuniga was shot in the face by an officer he allegedly assaulted after the officer stunned his wife with a taser. Sounds a little like the button
street shooting. If somebody stunned my wife with a taser, I believe that officer would have, he'd be getting assaulted from me as well. I mean,
in Santa Cruz, we have a different situation. What they do is they use lead instead of tasers, at least in the one case on the so-called Button Street incident where Brian Andrus came running down the stairway with a aluminum baseball bat because the officers broke into the house, supposedly to protect his wife, and then he was shot 4 times by the police officers, and eventually I think he was found, the jury hung, and he went back again, and although my recollection of this 10-year-old incident is kind of vague, It was quite a scandal for a number of us. It happened a year or two after the Happy John Dine shooting in Santa Cruz, the homeless man, or sometime homeless man, who was shot for allegedly
copping a battle stance or something.
For allegedly having a toy pistol in a combat stance. But this was a story that was only verified, it was contradicted by all non-police witnesses, of which there were a dozen. So that was an interesting case there. again, we're talking about a court decision. I'm reading a Mercury News story about the court decision which is impacting the San Jose Police Department's use of the taser. And apparently they give tasers to all their police officers. Tasers
well, they should. I mean, but, you know, and this is one of the big problems I have with restricting the use of tasers, because from our point of view who live on the streets, it's like, get electrocuted, get shot. I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of leaning towards electrocuted.
Well, there are other ways.
If I got to pick, you know what I mean?
You don't get, you know, that point. That's not the choice you should have to make.
Maced or beat up with a stick.
Continuing the story, though, tasers have long been controversial in San Jose, spawning public outcry by opponents who claim the weapons are too dangerous. Six people have died in San Jose after being shot by police tasers since San Jose issued the electrical weapons to all officers in 2004. Medical examiners, even within Santa Clara County, have disagreed over whether the stun gun contributes to such deaths. The department reported that officers used their taser guns 97 times in 2007, but the department has declined to make public information on the use of force since then. I want to point out that an attempt to get documentation of the use and display of force in Santa Cruz resulted, well, shortly after this was raised by the Citizens Police Review Board. That board was disbanded in 2003 by the Santa Cruz City Council. So we don't have accurate stats. Not only do we not have accurate stats on police tickets for marijuana, to see that, make sure that they're following Measure K.
So, just so we're clear, our police are under no citizens' review whatsoever.
I think we pay $25,000 to $40,000 a year to a so-called police auditor, independent police auditor, who makes a report to the city council in private, and then once a year makes a public report, which is not written, which is made verbally to the city council.
Mm-hmm.
You can file a complaint with the police auditor if you want.
Really?
Yeah, that's the case.
I bet that'll get you far, too.
It's generally pretty useless. On one occasion, he did do had a positive effect in the spy episode of the first DIY parade, where there was police infiltration of this nonviolent political event, and the police department investigated itself to find out if it was violating the law or the guidelines of the city. And the guy who investigated was the same guy who ordered the officers to do the surveillance and the infiltration in the first place. The city council and the city manager all found this was just fine. But this is the one instance in which the police auditor actually did something positive. He said, you know, you can't really send in the same guy to investigate himself to determine if it's appropriate. And so it should have resulted in a change in the police procedures in terms of infiltrating and surveilling political groups in Santa Cruz, but it did not.
So so to be clear, then they still have.
They claim to have been some changes made, but the changes proposed by the San Francisco ACLU, the local ACLU did not take any action on this, but the San Francisco ACLU did. They rejected the idea of even using the guidelines that San Francisco uses, and in essence, the same kind of surveillance and infiltration is still okay under the guidelines. And there was no disciplinary action taken against Deputy Chief Vogel. Kevin Vogel was the guy who both ordered the surveillance and then investigated the surveillance and found it was okay. He also investigated himself. He probably peered at himself very intently in the mirror. You know.
And is this legal? Is this okay? Can local police departments? I always assumed that they could not actively infiltrate political groups.
Oh, you silly boy. Apparently it is. I mean, let me put it this way. The DA hasn't charged any police officers with anything for this kind of behavior. They haven't changed their guidelines. They can do exactly the same thing.
I mean, why does the FBI back in the 50s and the 60s get slapped all around for infiltrating political
organizations?
Well, it was
during the 70s there was some criticism of the FBI with the Church Committee, but since that time, just as financial rules and the Glass-Steagall Act and all the supposed protections of the 30s against stock marketeering have been, or many of them have been leveled, similarly, you have a situation where, since we are at yellow alert, you know, under the Bush administration and the Obama regime, we now have to worry about terrorists, and terrorism means you have to, you know, leave a few civil liberties by the side of the road. Know what I mean?
No, I'm behind the curve. I didn't know that this was
you're
legal.
Not,
I'm in shock.
You're not following things. You know, you try to. You know, let me continue with my reading here. I'm constantly interrupting myself.
I'm going to add this to the list of questions to discuss with our dear mayor.
You'll hear quite an answer. He will come up with a mouthful more quickly than you can split a rail.
Oh, I know how fast he can shovel shit. Trust me.
Anyway, continuing with the. The San Jose Police Department no longer apparently gives out information on the use of force, just as the Santa Cruz Police Department does not, as far as I know. You can ask them about that, whether they give out use or display of force, what their guidelines are, how many times it happened last year. Can the public see the records?
The answer would be no, 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 I would assume.
Well, I have not asked for those records. I haven't had too much to do with the police department in terms of Public Records Act requests directly by myself. I'm going to be making another one regarding the... unreasonably disturbing noises citations downtown. I need to know what's going on with that. The police department has been not terribly cooperative with my requests. When I come in to get them, if I'm wielding a tape recorder, they won't deal with me. They will walk away from the office and they will suddenly their offices get vacant, even though they're obligated to do so under the Public Records Act. And I asked the same Deputy Chief Vogel to assure me that his staff, Tricia Houston, would in fact give me the records I was looking for. She called me up. She said she had them. I came down to get them. They refused to serve me. They insisted I turn off my tape recorder, and I said no.
Well, what's the problem? Why do you insist on having the tape recorder?
Well, first of all, on the matter of principle, police are videoing and audioing you when you're walking into their offices. You're a citizen. You have a right to do the same. And I've had problems with the police department in the past in terms of their interactions with me. They either don't give me the documents I want, or they insist on a higher payment or a different kind of payment. In other words, there's no reason why my interaction with a public employee shouldn't be documentable. It's lawful to do that. But they have a sign that says, we don't allow it. And therefore, as there are in other city offices, which I ignore, on those occasions when I want to record. So that's the reason that... the reason I do it is because I think it's important if there is a problem to have a record of what goes on. I've had, you know, problems with the police department. And if you have an objective audio record, it's less likely there's going to be a problem. And I think because they know that, or because they take a front at that, they actually create a situation where they're refusing to serve. And so I've told them that, you know, when the time serves, I'll bring back some people with video equipment and we'll go in and video the whole thing as well. So far, I've been engaged in other projects and haven't gotten back to that one. But it's something. We did that in the basement of the county building. We were trying to get sleeping ban records 3 years ago, and they started holding up on the records, court records. And they changed their policies to insist only one person can only get one record at a time, or can only get their own records. And then they insisted we leave, and I said, we're not going to leave a public place. We're going to stand there in line until we get the records. And they sent five deputies down to demand we leave, and we videoed them, stood our ground, and they backed off. Next time we went down there, they sent two deputies, and the next time they sent one. After that, they stopped sending deputies. They like to intimidate people, both in the police department and in the sheriff's department.
I've never seen anything quite like this. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, I've been in... politically involved in Boston and Maine and San Francisco, and I've never seen anything as overt as what we, you know, what the things we discuss here in Santa Cruz. I'm amazed. I mean, it's appalling.
Well, you know, when you challenge this, it's like downtown. They'll come up to a musician and they'll say, we've had a complaint, we want you to move along. And normally people will say, yeah, no trouble, I'll move along. Even though there's no basis for ever doing that. Even if a person is singing too loudly, what they need to do is tell them to sing more quietly, not move along. Or if they've been there for an hour, they have this bogus law, which I think is unconstitutional, which they can call the move-along law, which requires you, if you have a display device, to move along under the city's ordinance, a very rare ordinance. Maybe in one or two other cities. It's essentially, again, a tool for the police to selectively enforce. And so people, however, don't want to stand up to this because who wants the hassle, man? Most people, as you know, who are homeless are just struggling to survive, and they've got enough problems. They don't need to be political martyrs or heroes or anything. They just want to live.
I think that's, you know, I think that's always going to be the eternal conundrum of homeless activism, if there even is such a thing. And you know, I, 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 you know,
Well, it depends.
The continuous tension between, you know, saving your own ass and wanting to make a difference, wanting to change your own life, you know, wanting to change your future.
Well, if you get enough people who are interested, if they're stepping on enough toes, or if an incident is sufficiently egregious and it gets exposed, it can rouse people's anger and sense of solidarity, and that can happen. It's happened when we formed encampments, or when I say homeless people have been formed encampments, and some of us housed folks have supported them. But finishing this article about tasers in San Jose, attorney Duyen Huang Nguyen said the ruling, this ruling in federal court that San Jose and other cities can only use tasers as a way of protecting the safety of the officer, not as a tool to move someone along and so forth, not because they're passively resisting. He said the ruling is important for his client, San Jose State student Ho. He said his client posed no threat as he was shocked while on the ground in the hallway. This is the case you were asking about, Chris, surrounded by several officers. The police contend Ho was aggressively resisting their efforts to take him into custody. Raj Jayadev of Silicon Valley Debug, which is an interesting website I recommend to people, Google for capital DE-BUG, Debug, who has been a critic of the department's use of the stun gun, said he hoped the ruling will deter officers from using tasers and make the city rethink its investment given the mounting liability issues tied to it. Other local departments that use tasers were also reviewing the ruling. Santa Clara Captain... Mike Sellers said it's too premature to decide whether his department will make any changes since the ruling came out, and he's just reviewing it. And Los Altos Police Captain said he'd look into the ruling.
So great. They go back to shooting us again. I mean, again, I don't know that we win in that situation. I mean...
No. They're much more likely to...
Shoot you.
No. If they want to move you along and say, get going and pull out the taser, and you don't move, they can't shoot you. But they apparently think they can tase you. That's what they think. And this is what the court says you can't do. Or you have to show it's a felony rather than a misdemeanor, and it's aggressive resistance rather than passive resistance. The officer's safety is in danger. There has to be something real rather than, you know, stop arguing with me or I'll tase you. Stop arguing with me or I'll shoot you. I mean, it's true. They can shoot you, but that requires a lot of paperwork. You know? And not to mention, have to clean up the sidewalk afterwards. It's a difficult thing. Here's a story from Hawaii while you're pondering that one. Hawaii legislators considering campground for homeless.
Really?
I don't know.
In Hawaii? I'm there.
Lawmakers, he's heading out, folks. The weather is right.
Curb Hugger Chris will be emigrating shortly.
Lawmakers yesterday
said, real
folks,
bye.
More needs to be done to move the chronically homeless out of parks and off the street, and said opening a homeless campground could be one solution, especially for those who don't want to move into shelters. With no new sources of funding, it's unlikely such a proposal could move forward. But lawmakers in a legislative briefing yesterday on homelessness said they are trying to search for more money for homeless programs and express support for out-of-the-box solutions to help the homeless who are hardest to house. Sort of out of the box and into the tent, perhaps.
Move the box to a new place where it's safe to keep the box.
Except you're not allowed to do that in Santa Cruz. That's a structure not intended for human habitation, you see. About 20% to 25% of Hawaii's homeless population at any one time is considered chronically homeless.
Say that again?
20 to 25% of the homeless population is chronically homeless, meaning all the time homeless.
Like me.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you can't help them. They're chronics, which often means they've been on the streets for a year or more and suffer from a mental health or substance abuse issue.
I'm not telling.
You look a little crazy or high to me, big boy. We get a lot of public pressure about chronically homeless people, the economic impact, the blight that they cause.
The blight.
That they cause.
Of beach bumps in Hawaii.
State Rep. Rita.
Damn those beach bumps in Hawaii.
This is State Rep. Rita Cabanilla, chairwoman of the Housing Committee, said in a briefing, we need to shelter more of them. To make sure the blight... Get the blight out of sight. That's the story. Cabanilla, Democrat of the 42nd District in Waipahu, Honolulu, or Iwa Waipahu, added that because of the state's budget crunch, Any new program or project would either have to come from a new funding source or from cuts to other services. Of course, some private person, just like happened with Rick Morse,
president,
could do it. But, of course, then what happens is the city will find some way to stop it, is what we found. Like when we brought a porta potties in to Larry Templeton's Camp Paradise. The police immediately moved to remove it because we didn't have a permit.
Yeah, well, you
and they
know,
wouldn't give us.
You're assuming
they wouldn't
that
give
they're
us
uncool in Hawaii like they are here in Santa Cruz. Maybe they're cool there. Maybe they actually give a shit about their people and want to help them.
I mean,
it's out there in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, so they could be kind of weird like that.
I haven't heard that Hawaii is a paradise in that regard, but hey, I'm always open to new news reports, hence my reading of this one. I just want to make sure that those funds are being put to good use, she said. That's the homeless dollars, the millions of homeless dollars the federal government is giving out, you know, the continuum
of care.
They're
in Hawaii, dude.
You know.
They could just reach out and eat a fucking coconut or something.
Have to make sure they're not squandering the money.
Cabanilla supported the
idea of a campground being set up for chronically homeless people who don't want to go to shelters. Russ Sato.
In Hawaii.
State, yeah, controller. Yeah, she wants to support it, but she doesn't want to fund it yet, you know. And that governor's special advisor on homelessness raised the idea as one possibility during the briefing yesterday, saying such camps have worked in other states. Not according to Mike Rotkin, as he will tell you tomorrow if you talk to him. He will tell you that campgrounds just haven't worked. Sato said he wouldn't support taking funding from other existing homeless programs to fund a homeless campground. And Sato added the best solution to the state's homeless crisis remains building more affordable rental units. Yeah, that's what Mike Rotkin and others said 20 years ago in Santa Cruz. And in reality, the homeless situation has gotten worse, although small numbers of low-income units have been built. Earlier in the briefing during a press...
What if you got no income, though? I mean, you know what I mean? Low income's fine if
well,
you
there's
some
low income.
Income,
there's very low income, and there's extremely
zero.
Low
zero.
Well, no, there's nothing for zero-income people. You guys just don't count. Earlier in the briefing during a presentation to lawmakers, Sato said homeless people, quote, are not willing to go into shelters. And those tend to be homeless who prefer to sleep in parks or other public places.
No, we just prefer not to get nasty diseases and bugs and cooties and scabies and every fucking other... And all of those things have been caught by dudes this winter from staying in the armory. So, I mean, it's not even made up. I mean... I'm terrified of the place. I'm so scared of the place that I won't even associate with guys that hang out up there.
There you are. Is
because I've been continuously
bigotry
getting,
I allow on the air.
No, because I, no, not out of bigotry. Because they make me sick.
Literally,
every day, literally, physically, every time I physically embrace somebody who stays up at the armory, I have gotten sick this winter. And as you know, just got over the,
nah,
the last
the low.
Cold.
What if a low and bad immunity system? You've got to
bad
choose better parents next time. Now let's move along,
I'm telling
shall
you,
we?
It's a filthy shithole. They can't even wash the blankets or keep the place clean. Who the hell's going to want to stay?
Well,
in
now
a place
I
got to
like say
that
there are different people who have different opinions of the armory, and that certainly has been one view, a critical view. Although I've heard some positive comments about the armory.
Like what? Name one positive comment.
Well, I've actually, if you go back and look at the interviews for the last two or three weeks, you'll find a couple of people who said, I use the armory. It's not bad. One of the main objections that one of our Christmas Eve, the woman who doesn't want to be named, but who gave a very lengthy discussion of how she really didn't like the homeless memorial death celebrations because they were, you know, actually hurting homeless people, and that what we really need are real changes that would, you know, deal with that issue, open up buildings during the night and during the day and so forth that are not being used.
Well, that's the point of reading the names, is trying to shame the motherfuckers into doing something.
No,
like
the point
that.
Of that is to give a little puff piece to the homeless staff once a year. She said if this were done every month, and if it were done as a homeless run thing, and there was a little funding for a memorial where homeless people themselves could talk about the people who died, it would mean something. But this once a year bullshit is a token effort that actually serves to, you know, fluff up the people who are running these programs and the poverty pimps who are trying to get money for them, and the well-intentioned charity efforts that have little to do with, you know, meaningful solutions to this problem. So, continuing, however, with the Hawaii situation. Earlier in the briefing during a presentation to lawmakers, Sato, this is one of the representatives, congressional representatives, said some homeless people are not willing to go into shelters. What I care about is that they deny everybody else the opportunity to use services they choose to occupy. See, so the reason is not to help homeless people because of the need and because of the total inadequacy of the shelters, which is generally agreed. I would probably suspect even Hawaii. I don't even think this person knows what she's talking about.
I'm not
in
sure
Hawaii.
What they need shelters for in Hawaii.
Well, you're missing the point, that even in Hawaii, there, even if they had... You know, if they, everybody was willing to go into shelter, there aren't...
Oh, my God, the temperature is 72.
There aren't shelters for them. Right. In other words, so therefore the idea that you can even propose this, and then you're going to blame homeless people for not going to shelters that don't exist. Santa Cruz has been doing this for years. And it's just a standard tactic used by people who don't want to address the real problem, in my view. Rotkin will do it tomorrow as he talks to you, I'm sure, if you raise this issue. Not sure. I suspect he may. The homeless briefing came as advocates say they're seeing the ranks of the homeless population growing. Sandy Miyoshi, director of the state homeless programs, said a new homeless point-in-time count will be conducted shortly statewide. The issue of the chronic homeless population has made headlines in recent months after a new encampment moved into Kapi'olani Park and then was moved out again. There's also evidence that numbers of chronic homeless people is growing in urban Honolulu, especially in Chinatown, residents have said. Organizations are making progress to tackle the homeless problem, she added, but not because we are well-funded and resources are being stretched more than ever as more people seek help and waiting lists for all kinds of services grow. I mean, you know, the food stamp, the number of people getting food stamps nationwide is just at the largest it's ever been. And so this sort of slimy attempt to sort of micro-focus on one aspect of things and then blame that group of people is... It's a way of, I guess, reassuring people that these bureaucrats are doing a good job or doing the best they can. You know, they're saying that, you know, we're even considering campgrounds for the homeless because they're despoiling public places and choosing not to go into shelters that don't exist. And as you point out, who needs a shelter anyway in Hawaii? You need some areas that are available for setting up a tent. You know?
Yeah, I mean, Jesus, you know, and I can't even imagine. I bet you that if they got a ban on tenting or camping outdoors, I just can't even imagine. In Hawaii, I mean...
I'm tired of reading this because, you know, you get to hear all these panjen drums, these politicians making their pompous statements and then saying, we don't know if we can afford it, even though you're going to spend a lot more cleaning up crap and dealing and putting people in jail than you would if you set up a campground that people or let people set up their own campgrounds. You know, it is really incredible, but actually it's quite credible because it's historically what happens. People are blinded by bigotry and they prefer to believe these fantasies about what's going on rather than deal with real problems. And that's what I get out of this story, which I haven't finished, but the name of the story again is Funding a Major Concern as Lawmakers Race Search for Ways to Ease Problem, or at least like to talk about it. Hawaiian legislators consider campground for the homeless. And of course that's an obvious thing that Rotkin could propose. He would have a majority to get a campground. Byers Lane and Madrigal and the city council would probably vote for a campground if he put it forward. That's going to happen when a cold day in hell shows up. And what he'll tell you is, bring me a proposal. That's what he'll tell you tomorrow if you talk to him about that. That'll be his phrase. Even though proposals have been brought to him repeatedly in the past. And he has not been that interested. I've got other stories, but how about some voices from the street? And perhaps a voice from the street here, street guy.
I don't know. I mean, at some point, you know... I don't know how much we're going to get out of Mr. Rotkin. I mean, 20 years, man. 20, what has it been? At least 15 years.
He's been in office since 1979.
The stuff that comes out of him is almost like it's canned at this point. I'm not even sure if he puts any conscious effort into the answers. He just sort of, you know, spiels them out on autopilot. And I just don't know. I don't know what we gain by the interview other than one more chance. One more time, remind Santa Cruz of what a douchebag
For me, it's an example of what you might want to be doing is setting the stage although, you know, these interviews don't go out very far, for public sympathy, which the Downtown Association is doing its best to destroy. Take back Santa Cruz, the Downtown Association's, you know, they're talking about putting in parking meters where you put money in the meter that goes to the homeless.
And that's old. That proposal, oh, these are old. That proposal
for sure.
Has
these
been
are
recycled
old.
From the
Yeah, yeah.
From
they're
the
always,
90s.
They act like from the 80s.
Even.
The
parking meter thing has been
give
recycled
a hand,
a couple
not a
times.
Handout,
yeah.
All this
yeah.
old stuff, which is yeah. get those panhandlers away from our shops, let's blame them. It's tiring. And kind of, I probably shouldn't even be talking about this stuff.
It's so
because
funny
it's,
because
you know, it's,
the parking meter one especially really kills me because it's illogical on the face of it. How would adding a layer of bureaucracy to anything increase its efficiency? So, therefore, why would it not be more efficient to just hand somebody money than
because
to create a whole bureaucracy?
The object is not to get the object is not to get the people the money. The object is to get people to leave because they know that the money is going to go into the parking meters rather than to them.
Right.
That's the point.
Right. And somebody's got to pay Maggie and all those other outreach workers that they send down there to periodically.
Yeah, I've got no clear sense of how valuable the outreach workers are.
I was outreached, okay.
Tell me about that.
Okay, I was outreached. Maggie, I even got her card somewhere. Maggie, what's her name there? You know her name? You know her name? She's ahead of the whole...
I rarely see her downtown, or if I do, I guess I don't know what she looks like.
I don't know if I even still have the card. But, yeah, I was outreached, and it was... what was funny about it is they target you, you know. What happens is after you get several tickets, that's kind of like your welcome to Santa Cruz thing, or in my case, welcome home to Santa Cruz. Officer Warren and Officer Winston kind of tagged around and gave me my handful of tickets, and then they sicked old Maggie on me, who outreached me, and kindly told me that if I marched my ass up to Emmeline, that I could get some food stamps. And, of course, I did that, and I think I've talked on the air already about my experience with that. I got exactly 1 month's worth of food stamps, refused to turn myself into my food stamp probation officer to account for my productivity, and was, you know, promptly cut off the program. So I'm 45 years old and I have no food stamps, even though I'm eligible, should be by all rights eligible to get them.
Well, it has been said that Santa Cruz is a town where it's not that hard to get food, even for people who are homeless, in the sense that there's a lot of meals available.
I'll admit that that's true, yeah. And I'll admit that the
not shelter. Shelter is hard to find, but food is not as hard to find as shelter.
I'll admit, and that wasn't always the case, and so it is an improvement. Having been homeless in the 90s and the 80s,
but it's really kind of hard to say how improved it is because they've driven the food server Dennis Adams from the town clock out to the homeless service center. Elm Street stopped a lot of its meals. Ronnie Curry's Sunday is under pressure to stop. And, in fact, I saw her meeting with Ryan Coonerty yesterday in the coffee roasting company. Stay strong, Ronnie. Stay strong.
I hope, but she was already weakening, and so was Scott when I talked to him.
Scott is her husband.
Yeah, and there was talk about, well, we don't know if we want the confrontation and whatnot. Yeah. And these are people who just want to help, and genuinely want to help, and they don't want the bullshit.
Right.
You know, you
takes
know
food,
I mean?
Not bombs, to stand up to the bullshit.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know what I mean?
Other groups,
I mean,
like that.
And these folks aren't it. And it's a crying shame. It's a crying shame that normal citizens can't come out on the sidewalk on a Sunday afternoon and help people, you know, something as old as time, without feeling criminalized, marginalized, and just generally, you know, shit upon, especially in the press. And this Coonerty fellow really got a lot to answer for. And 3 days before Christmas, shame on the Sentinel for doing that. Shame on the Sentinel.
Yeah,
for Coonerty
has gotten
bullshit.
A lot of flack, and there's been a long thread on the Sentinel's website. I talked about it last Sunday, where he went to Don Miller, the Sentinel editor, and said, "I don't like all these racist and homophobic and bad and too much nasty commentary on the Sentinel topics." The problem, and there were a lot of people who attacked Coonerty for, you know, trying to kind of manage how the Sentinel should do the comments section. It already does delete a lot of comments quickly.
Well, we pissed somebody off. Go ahead and let them have their say.
Oh, who knows? Probably just maybe somebody advertising. Who knows? Hi, we hope you can hear us. You're on free radio.
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, wonderful. This sounds like Scope It Out, Scott.
Anyway, Santa Cruz has a long history of squashing food giveaway programs.
Really?
Yes.
You don't say.
No, but like years ago at the Red Church, when there was a program there back in the 70s and early 80s.
What program is that? Are we talking about?
What was the guy's name?
Kuroda's Soup Kitchen.
They had a every night they had a free meal at the Red Church.
Oh.
And the guy who ran it eventually started a nudist colony up over in the outside of Los Gatos.
So much better than serving food to poor people. I mean, what the hell, right?
Yeah.
Shit. Oh, well, so...
But I can't remember the guy's name offhand. But anyway, the city went to great lengths to pressure the church, because the church was only providing the space. The church wasn't actually doing the meal. It was a bunch of other people doing the meal. And they were just providing the kitchen space and the room with which to hand the food out. And the city just went overboard to try to shut that meal down. And eventually did. They put enough pressure on everybody to, drive some of the people that were doing it out of town. And
this was in the late 70s, early 80s, you're talking?
Yes.
Well, I know that Kuroda got a lot of... He used to serve out food in the beach flats in the early 80s, and he got a lot of trouble doing that.
Well, even at his present location, the city tried to get the Catholic Church to take that piece of property away from him.
You're talking about at the St. Francis Soup Kitchen?
Yes.
When was that, Scott? Do you have any documentation about that?
Well, I don't have documentation about
it. Well, then why should we listen to you?
Happening. I remember that... It was right after he first opened in that location.
Now, this is the guy that banned the deadheads from the soup kitchen, right?
That's true.
Because I was, at the time, one of those fucking deadheads.
They
had to go
the deadheads
in disguise,
from everywhere, except for, Grateful Dead shows, which don't exist anymore, so the deadheads shouldn't exist anymore.
Yes.
I guess I'm a retired deadhead.
Well, I know the Red Church, the only time I ever heard of a church being ticketed was when a guy called Jones, who was an assistant pastor there in 1988, at the height of the, when they were giving out hundreds of camping tickets each month, and we were on the streets with a homeless table organizing at city council trying to get them to change the law with a petition for homeless rights. He let people sleep on the church grounds, and the cops ticketed them. And then he would do this thing where he'd let them all run into the church when the cops came. The cops came into the church and threatened to ticket them in the church.
They should.
Right, because it's illegal.
Because there is no such thing as sanctuary except if you happen to be Mexican drug dealer.
Well,
then you get sanctuary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Racist Pig.
No, it's
the truth. He's
telling
the
truth here, Come on. It has nothing to do with being a racist pig. It has to do with the truth. The truth is, if you're from south of the border and you're a heroin dealer, you get sanctuary in this city.
God bless.
And in this county.
Right.
Well, I think if you are, I don't know. I haven't researched that issue. I know that you get sanctuary from immigration. I don't know if you get sanctuary from prosecution for something else. Maybe you have more data on that. But the point I'm making is not that, a criminal was running inside the church, in this case a sleep criminal. It's that he tried to let people sleep inside the church, and that the police were bold enough to go after that and arrest, to ticket them anyway and drive them out, because people may not know this. The sleeping ban applies on all private property inside buildings that are not houses or hotels. That's my understanding of the sleeping ban. And that's not usually enforced, but, it's not legal to sleep in any theater, in any business office. Any place that isn't actually a domicile.
So I would say that the armory probably fits under there.
The entire ISSP program is illegal. The armory is not inside the city limits, I don't think. I think it's outside.
I think it is. I think the city owns
the armory's in the city.
The golf course up there.
That's true. They do own the De La Vega course. I don't know if the armory
and
property.
I think they've been trying to make some sort of deal with the state to actually buy the armory.
I know that the ISSP program for years never explicitly showed me or said they had any permits that would allow them to use churches as sleeping quarters. Yet you know, there was this church program that allowed people to sleep in the churches in the city, funded by the city,
right,
without changing the law. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's just another, you know, example of our schizophrenic system here.
Well, perhaps we could have you sit in as an observer on the interrogation of Mayor Rotkin tomorrow morning.
If it was going to be, you know, a beheading, I would gladly take part.
Well, that depends on who wants to bring the sword.
Pork-tongue Mike.
Hey, we can't threaten him on the air.
We're not
threatening him. If this was going to be a beheading, if that was what was going to happen, if we're going to take him out in the town square and chop his head off like it should have been like 15, 20 years ago, I would gladly take part in that.
We'll be sending.
Alrighty then.
We'll be sending the appropriate authorities to your house.
Rocket is the most fork-tongued individual I've ever met in my life. You know, how can you tell when Mike's telling the lying because his mouth is moving?
Well, I do remember back in 1998 during the Beach Flats hearings of the Civic Auditorium, you had a large sign up that you held up in the back, and you would put it up when various council members, including Mike Rotkin, would speak. At certain points. Do you remember what that sign said?
Yeah, you're a liar.
Or it's a lie, is that
right? Right, it's a lie, whatever.
And I think you had, it had two sides. It had it's a lie, and there was another side that said, you know, that's true or something.
Or no, that's right on or something. I don't
know. Right on, yeah.
I didn't make up those signs. Doug Rand did, actually.
Doug Rand. Oh, there's a blast from the past.
But I would say that all came out of being because at a couple of meetings, I, like, shouted out that somebody was lying on a certain point, like, you know, the various individuals who were pushing the Beach Flats, the Beach South of Laurel plan, like, who was the guy that was in charge of the...
Well, you had Kennedy and Rotkin were the kind of the two prime people pushing
that.
Oh,
yeah, but Mike Schmidt, he was, like, pushing it hard, too.
He was always
bending the truth as to what the plan was going to do for the city. Because there's all these benefits to the boardwalk, but the benefits to the actual city were very few and far between, and would only happen when all this other crap happened that would benefit the boardwalk.
And, you know, what is the status of the Beach South of Laurel situation now? You have a minute to sum up.
Well, the only thing that's really happening is that they want to tear down La Bahia and turn it into this, you know, Florida, Miami-style hotel, what they call a boutique motel, you know, and it's a historic landmark, and they want to tear it down.
And you, in the way of progress, want to stop that. Is that right?
Of course, yes.
That's shocking. Well, Scott, thank you.
But I would tell your co-host there to be very mindful of, you know, Mike trying to, like, slick over anything he's trying to, you know, any questions he's asking Mike. Mike's going to lie to him.
Oh, I know that.
You know,
I've dealt with
him. It's like.
I've never dealt with Mike Rotkin directly, but I've seen him in action for many years, and even decades.
Trying to, like, trap him. You know, corner him or something.
Oh, I know we're not going to hold him to account.
Slipping out of your news, you know.
I think the best that we can hope for, like I said, with some of these irredeemable sleaze bags, is to just try to hold them up for what they are at every opportunity. He's giving us yet one more opportunity for us to show Santa Cruz what he's really all about, and that's the best you can hope for. We're not going to get any solutions or answers out of him, and I understand that. So
it's like what somebody once told me about Rockin is if he could only shut up for a little while, maybe we can get the truth out of him.
Thank you, Scott, for
all right. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks for the call. And we've gotten a little sloppy and informal here at the end of the show, but hey, at least we got a phone caller. And there seems to be a banging at the door. Can you see if that we should open to the door or whether we should turn away?
What if it's the cops?
Well, that let them in for interviews, but don't allow. We have another. It's of course our upcoming. It's our upcoming broadcaster, the ever lovable Uncle Dennis, who's going to lead the three-hour parade that's coming up with songs, dance, and probably an ale of his own choosing.
Get some dancing girls out in the hallway, too. Oh, Coors, man.
Coors Light. I'm afraid
bringing beer.
That's the basis for eviction from
I like
the collective.
It.
We do have the brew of the week. That'll be coming up. I'm not going to reveal what it is, so give that Uncle, Uncle Dennis
Rocket
Ale, power.
Baby.
I want to thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. If you were, of course, we didn't hear you, but still. And that includes you, Curb Hugger Chris.
Thank you, Robert. Yeah. I appreciate it, and thank you, Santa Cruz, and we'll see you again Sunday. Or
right, Sunday morning at 9:30, and I think Troublesome Thomas Levitt will actually be back in the studio. He's promised to actually...
He paid his dues,
and he told me his check is in the mail. Yes. Well, that's probably true. I mean, you know, Thomas.
I don't have any reason to doubt it.
Thomas is an honorable man. So are they all honorable men? Yes, for sure.
That is excuse number two.
Oh, really? Yes, that's true. I'm not sure what excuse number one is.
I won't come in your mouth.
Ooh.
Yeah, this getting me a little aroused here, Dennis.
Sliding into porn.
Let's talk about this outside, shall we? In any case, I'm going to turn the mic over to Uncle Dennis after this next song. And again, if you want to catch me, if you have any reports of police misconduct, you want to help with... We're working on a project which I should have been discussing but haven't been, about street performers being harassed downtown. I was one of them. I'm a part-time performer.
I know, and there's a good reason for that, Robert.
Oh, well, we won't get into that at this time. In any case, thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. It looks like Uncle Dennis, we'll see if we can get our own song in here first. See you next time.
Somebody sing, hello, hello, hello. Somebody sing. Somebody cries, why? Somebody sing. Somebody sing, hello. Somebody sing. Somebody cry, why? Kulumane,
Kulumane, Kulumane says,
sing and John.
Baya chapula basichanda.
And welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. Uncle Dennis here. For the next 3 hours, we're going to be exploring the music of the 60s and the 70s. Actually, that there was music from the 70s, I believe. Yes. Paul Simon from... let's see, what was that album? Anyway, that was from the 70s, I believe. Anyway, From the Cream to the Dregs is the name of this show. We'll be here till 11 o'clock. About a half an hour from now, we'll open up the Brew of the Week. About 9 o'clock, we'll have the Earth First Update for a half an hour of environmental news you can use. And at 10 o'clock, the Spotlight Group of the Week, an entire hour of one group or one artist with their history and the whole bit. So stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Donate if you can.
Okay. Before we get started, I'd just like to say that we are making a live recording here tonight. It should be A-OK. So right now, Boston Tea Party is proud to present to you the one and only incredible Fleetwood Mac. Come on, head for him.
I've got a black magic woman. Yes, I got a black magic woman. She's got me so blind I can't see that she's a black magic woman, and she's trying to make the devil out of me. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Now don't turn your back on me, baby. Don't turn your back on me, baby. You're messing around with the tricks. Turn your back on me, baby, 'cause you might just break up my magic stick. Baby, you got your spell on me, baby.